Welcome to the Global Business Women's Pod, brought to you by the Greater Houston Women's Chamber of Commerce. I am Susan Dyson and proud to be the CEO, President, and Founder of the Chamber. Please join us for this empowering podcast every Thursday at 6 p.m.
Well, hi, Julie. How are you? It's so good to have you here today. So let me just introduce you to the audience. Julie has a really, really small job. She's only the head of Chevron Global Talent Acquisition. And you've been with Chevron since 1998. Also, what I love about Julie is she's a big supporter of women in the industry, leadership sponsor for the Houston Women's Network, Gulf Coast Executive Women's Steering Committee member, a member of various employee networks, and of course, board member of the Greater Houston Chamber of Commerce. Welcome.
Thanks, Anna. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, this is going to be fun. So we get to talk about, you know, the things that we both love, which is talent and talent acquisition. And I think, you know, a big question nowadays, as much as you hear about mega organizations that are doing layoffs, there's still a challenge of finding the right talent, right? In a competitive, it's still a very much a competitive market. So what are some of the biggest challenges that you're finding in attracting top talent today?
You're right, Anna. These days are totally different than what we knew even 5 years ago, right? The landscape has changed. And I'd like to say we're looking for the best talent, not the right talent, because right has a connotation of bias a little bit too. But the best talent with the right skills at the right time in the right place, right? And so what we have found in the last couple of years, that's one of the, well, there's probably two opportunities that we have found that is finding a little bit challenging to acquire or appeal to the talent that we're looking for, both locally and globally. And one is ensuring that we showcase and are able to articulate our Chevron narrative. So it's no secret that oil and gas has some positive and some negative connotation, depending on who you are, where you live, maybe. But we want to make sure that people understand the narrative and the employee value proposition that comes with working for an energy company that powers human energy for the world. So take a moment for that. We try to articulate the impact an employee can have on the world and bringing energy to the world. Articulating that, though, can be a challenge from time to time, given with making sure that we're moving in the directions of new energies, as well as a traditional oil and gas. So that's one opportunity that we find makes it a little challenging to appeal to the right and the best talent. The second thing we find that can be a challenge is ensuring that the candidate can see themselves with a career at Chevron. That doesn't mean you have to be here 25 years like I have, but what kind of career and development and experience can you gain at Chevron? And that is tricky because the workforce, the talent pool, has some different drivers. Right? Some people want 100% flexibility working from home. Some people need the hybrid. Some people want to work for a couple of years in a company and then leave. So what is that employment model that speaks to multiple demographics, again, locally and globally? So those are a couple of things we're finding a bit challenging, but we're up for the challenge.
Right. And I think, first of all, I have to say, what a powerful statement to make by saying power human energy across the globe. Mm-hmm. I mean, that alone should make you want to say, I want to be part of that journey. I want to be part of that mission.
Yeah. The energy and progress is what we're trying to appeal to and do our applicants or the people we're trying to appeal for to, as well as our own employees, feel that they're part of that energy, right? As well.
Yeah. And often because I think there's a little bit of the misconception that, you know, oil and gas, you know, like old traditional.
Right.
As opposed to if you look out of all the industries out there where you can choose employment, probably one of the industries that's the most exciting is what's happening in the energy sector with the constant growth, looking at alternative solutions, green energy, going after renewable, you know, like, I mean, you name it, there's such a variety. Exactly. So now the industry as a whole, it's hit with so many tools, right? Sometimes it's so overwhelming and hard and difficult to navigate. How can talent acquisition teams use data and technology to improve their efficiency and effectiveness?
So there's, it's a kind of like you're a kid in the candy shop sometimes with all amount of tools that are out there that can help with talent acquisition. Three things come to mind. First, you have to look for the tools that are going to put the customer first. And our customer in talent acquisition is the candidate. And that's external candidate or internal candidate, ones that are looking passively or actively. And so how do you have a tool that is designed with the customer in mind first? And that's a nice criteria to start with because it makes a big impact and will help appeal to those candidates more. It also is important to have the lens when looking at tools. Does it help the business, right? So in talent acquisition, we're a function that helps the business attract, appeal to, and select the talent that's going to bring the energy to the world, right? But we need to make it easy and business-facing for the customer as well. So that's the first one. The second one I would say would be that the experience that the candidate or the hiring supervisor goes through is easy. It's intuitive. You don't need a handbook to tell you how to navigate through the tool, right? It's intuitive, kind of like your cell phone. You know, these apps, they don't come with a quick reference guide. They come with download the app and figure it out, right? You've got to make it easy and intuitive and be able to show the big value, but with minimal change management, minimal disruption to the candidate or the business. The third one I'd say is the ability, you know, I'm always looking for a tool. We actually have one that we use externally now for talent acquisition, but the tool has AI that does the candidate matching to a job or the job to the candidate to the job. And it's skills-based, which is where we've been moving. And it does a lot of the work for both the candidate, remember again, customer-focused, for the candidate and for the business. And it will bring more value from a diversity perspective because you could be missing some candidates that maybe you weren't looking at. Or alternatively, the candidate has downplayed their resume, right? They don't think they can apply for X, Y, or Z's job. But guess what? The AI is like, I've read your resume. You likely have skills that would match with this job over here. So that it opens up such a huge pool for you when looking at different candidates too. So those are the three things I say.
Right. And great tips for the audience to kind of apply back within their organizations. I think you hit a couple of points, you know, the fact of making the journey important for the candidate and making it easy, right? That's so critical.
Yes.
The other aspect is the gender bias, which is so true. Like there are so many studies out there that say, you know, if a man is applying for a job and they have 6 out of the 10 criteria, they think they got the job. Right. If a woman has 6 of the 10, they say, I'm not going to apply because I'm not qualified. I don't have everything that I need. Yeah. But AI can help that as far as taking that, you know, that bias away.
Absolutely.
So now how can talent acquisition teams create a more personalized and human-centered experience for the candidates? One of the concerns is with all the tools and the technology and AI that we're taking the human element out. So what advice would you give as far as you can still maintain that personalized touch?
Sure. So a couple things come to mind. Again, back to the process. The experience needs to be easy, first of all. If people have to click multiple times, they've lost interest. And actually, our career sites technology tells us how many times people are clicking, where are they going, when are they tapping out? They're like, I'm done, I can't do this anymore. But I think one critical thing is a personalized advertising and kind of marketing approach where you really know your audience. And you can have a broad message, but also be able to customize. So for example, when we are hiring for IT, if we have multiple jobs that we're hiring for, we will do a campaign that's specific for that and come up with a targeted campaign, a targeted maybe microsite that speaks to that IT candidate, more personalized. Now they can still learn more about Chevron, but now we've done a double click, if you will, to personalize it more to IT. So that now they're like, oh, they're talking to me about the types of roles and what it's like to not only work at Chevron, but what it's like to work in IT at Chevron. So that, I think, customizing, making sure you know your audience where applicable, but also having a global campaign that speaks to multiple demographics. Not easy to do, but can be done, right? The diversity of the marketing and advertising approach is super important. I also think that showcasing a company's culture, that employee value proposition up front, and using real Chevron people. We have a lot of advertisement that might use actors, right? And we started to move away from that and have a balance between that and some real Chevron employees. Now you got to keep up with that too, right? You want to make it fresh and new, but when you can have testimonials from your own employees or retirees or alumni of your company, it starts to feel more personal. It feels more like a culture of people-centered, which is what Chevron is known for as well. We're a very people company, very collaborative culture. And I think that really goes a long way for the person looking to come to work at Chevron. They feel it from the website alone, right? Because you're not really having a dialogue with them if you're only using technology. That first impression is super important. And then I think two things, once you kind of had them apply, and let's say they were selected, giving them timely feedback on that so we're not dragging that out, and a live person talking to them about their questions versus read this website, that never gives a personalized touch, right? Or if we did not select them, that we revert back and give some feedback as to why. That then helps not only the candidate know a little bit more about themselves and what maybe could work going forward, but also secures a positive opinion about our brand. And then I think the last thing is, let's say we've selected them, they're coming to work for Chevron. How do we onboard them in a way that they feel welcomed? We're test driving, I think a lot of companies do this, but a welcome kit, right? So instead of the first day on your desk, you get something, it comes to your house before you even get to Chevron. It's a box of some Chevron swag, if you will, but it's like, hey, welcome. We see you. We're excited to have you here. Here's some things that might help you understand Chevron a little bit more. It's the history of Chevron, our diversity networks that we have, maybe a water bottle and a portfolio as well. But, you know, something that really says, hey, we see you and we can't wait to get you here. So those kinds of personal touches go a long way.
I agree, Julie. I mean, I think, you know, I worked for a CEO once that always used to say the expression is, we were kind of growing exponentially. How do we stay small but continue to grow exponentially? Because you want to maintain that, you know, defined culture, right? Where that people aspect. And that always becomes a little bit of a challenge. But I think some of the advice, some of the points that you've highlighted, it definitely gives you that human-centered experience, which is exactly what candidates want to be able to relate to.
Yeah, super hard to do, like you said, Anna, on large company, but still operate as a small company. And we actually say that when I recruit. We're a big company, but a small family. You know, I'm third generation Chevron. I know a lot of people at Chevron, even though, you know, 35,000 or more, I don't know everybody, but it's ironic sometimes someone will ask me, do you know so-and-so? Oh yeah, I do know so-and-so. Or people feel that culture the moment they walk in the door, that it's a small family as well.
Right, right. They get that embrace, which is always the way you want to start.
Absolutely.
So let's talk a little bit about best practices for managing a global talent acquisition process.
Okay.
You know, what I mean, you know, being the global landscape, you've hit on a couple of points, you know, not only the cultural diversity, but just diversity in general. Like, how do you manage it? What three takeaways do you think you can leave the audience with?
Great question. And, you know, we've grappled with that for the last couple of years, but did a lot of internal and external research and listening, right? Truly hearing our customer, both internal and external, and not just in the United States. Since we are a US-based company, we operate in multiple countries around the world. So we really had to go out and ask different perspectives. And it came down to, I'm going to cheat, Anna, and come up with four.
Okay, great.
Okay. If a global company, you really need to operate with an enterprise view, but a local lens. What do I mean by that? There's a lot of things like we can do that help and work globally, but there's a lot of things we can't do that will work globally. And so you start with that global view, that enterprise view, and then you get more granular where appropriate for that local market. For example, in branding, in a certain country, I might have to brand a little differently because they don't have the Chevron brand in that country. They have no idea what Chevron is. They might think we're the Chevrolet company. I don't know. They, you know, who knows what they... So you have to brand differently. So I'm not going to come really in hot with a big Chevron brand. They won't know what that is. So how do you customize for the local markets where appropriate? Not for everything, but where appropriate. So I think that's the first one. The second one I would say is focus on skills-based hiring. I know that a lot of people in the marketplace now are really looking for what skills do people bring, not necessarily a degree and experience, but what's more of the package? Because you can have skills and not have a degree behind it, right? You can have experience that in several different areas that are transferable skills to another area. So how do you focus on skills-based hiring? And then the third, we said it a couple of times, drive that inclusive and equitable practices and processes and programs and really do what you say you're trying to do. Show those programs. For example, Chevron has a neurodiversity program. We have a veteran strategy. We have a returnship program. These are the things that we put time and energy into because we see the value, and it also helps with thinking differently, bringing in those different mindsets, different experiences, and different skills. And then the fourth one where I'm breaking the rules and doing more than three is provide that relentless, and I've said it multiple times through this podcast, customer experience. If your customer's not happy, it's going to be hard to get that talent to come to Chevron or even stay at Chevron. Also, it will be difficult for those hiring supervisors to do their day job if we don't make the process simple, easy, and value add. They can't get oil out of the ground or figure out what that new energy is if they're constantly trying to click through a TA process, right? So those are the four things I think are super important.
Right, and great lessons there. And you hit the nail on the head when you said getting them to stay.
Yeah.
It's one thing to hire.
That's right.
Right, but retention is such a tremendous component to all of this because if not, you're running in place.
Exactly, yeah. And we, you know, our employment model over the year and career model is flexing and being changing a bit given where we're at in society, right? Long-term employment is different now. So how do you make sure when you're retaining the talent, you don't have to retain everybody, but you should have some natural healthy attrition, but you need to make that value proposition for the folks to stay. And if they don't stay, they're still a brand ambassador for us when they leave.
Exactly. So, Julie, what, unfortunately, we've kind of come to the end, but if you were to leave the audience with a power word, a focus word for the year, what would you leave them with?
Yeah, so I thought about this one, and my word is purposeful. If you have purpose and you're purposeful with what you're doing, not only in your personal life, professional life, and if you're in a talent acquisition professional, you're purposeful about what you're doing, the big impact that you have and the value that you bring, and people will feel it, is really important.
Fantastic, Julie. What great insight. Thank you so much for sharing so openly, and look forward to having you back on, hopefully in the near future.
Absolutely. Thanks, Anne. I appreciate the time.
Thank you so much for joining us. We will see you again next Thursday at 6 p.m. For more information about the Chamber and our podcast, please visit us at ghwcc.org.